So welcome to another episode of The Crux of It, a spin-off from York Hospital Radio. Thanks for listening and thank you to our panel tonight of South Stand regulars Ben Robinson and Dave Hughes. So what's happened since our last episode? Well, at the last recording, Neil Ardley had just been sacked. Adam Hinchelwood had just been appointed. It's safe to say the first four games didn't go to plan. Home defeats to Wealdstone and Fylde. A draw at Kidderminster before a sobering 6-1 thumping at Altrincham. I think a few of us could have predicted a run of games against Aldershot, Bromley and Chesterfield and Halifax. All in the top seven would yield 10 points from 12. What a remarkable turnaround to go from such a feeble defeat, probably one of the worst in York City's history, to this run. I know I didn't see it coming. Dave, do we have to kind of salute Adam and everyone have to happily eat some humble pie?
Yeah, I'll be the first in the queue at the Humble Pie Cafe, it's fair to say. I think after Altrincham, obviously, what was that, third or fourth game in, it was quite terrifying at that point. I think we all thought we were probably down. And I know personally I did. And I'd be quite open about the fact that I didn't think there was a way back. I thought it would be National League North next season. I didn't think we'd be able to stay up. I think now, having seen the last few games, that is wrong. I think we will stay up. And I think Adam deserves all the credit. I was saying to people at Halifax last night, I haven't seen a York City team turn performances around in such a short space of time, in the time that I've been watching, so 20-odd years. I've not seen that happen. So maybe it's happened previously, but it's quite remarkable, the change since Altrincham just those few weeks ago as to where we are now. It's remarkable. So, yeah, for me, I'll eat that humble pie and, you know, applause all round for Adam, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I agree, Dave. I think, like, I can't think of a time when we've ever had such a reaction. I mean, those fixtures look pretty daunting after Altrincham, who were horribly out of form at the time as well. I think we felt going to Altrincham was a good time to play them, but it clearly wasn't. Ben, I mean, I know Marvin Armstrong signed, and we'll come on to the signings in a minute, but predominantly it's mainly the same set of players as well, isn't it? To go from that, where we saw sort of some of the players arguing with some of the fans, and then just a few weeks later to be in this position is pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised more than anything. I think after Altrincham, you looked at it, and yes, there was three keeping errors, but those three keeping errors, there were still three goals we then conceded on top of that. So you're looking at Altrincham, and it was a disaster. I'd never seen such an utter collapse from minute one, where you just had no hope of winning whatsoever. I genuinely thought after that night, it was another McNamara kind of signing we'd brought in management-wise. You know, I just thought it was going to end in absolute disaster this season, probably finish second bottom with only Oxford City propping us up below. But since that Altrincham game, it's absolutely mad, because at the time, I think we were 5 points off Boreham Wood. They've gone on to lose all the next six games, whereas we're now 5 points ahead of them. So just that total change around in the last sort of four or five matches is unbelievable, and I'm not too sure how it's happened. I mean, like you say, we'll talk about Marvin Armstrong in a bit, but I think a lot of people allude to belief in the system almost, and Ardley maybe not giving them the belief that they can actually play football. But how you get that suddenly instilled in the players from a 6-1 defeat, I have no idea. And it's making Adam Hinchelwood looking like a pretty tidy manager at the minute.
Yeah, I'd totally echo those thoughts. And you're right about that Altrincham defeat as well, because it, you know, having been at the Gateshead 6-1 and the Guiseley 6-1, those games, you know, Guiseley, we took the lead. Gateshead, I think it was 1-1 at half time. Whereas Altrincham, we were just one down after a couple of minutes, weren't we? And just literally felt like the whole game, Altrincham could have, you know, smashed us by 10 at least. Sort of signings-wise then, Adam's brought in Leon Gavata from Eastbourne. I probably pronounced that horribly wrong. Marvellous Marvin Armstrong from Barnet, having had him at Worthing before. Sam Fishburne on loan from Fleetwood. Armstrong's clearly the pick of a bunch. Now, I can't remember anyone having the impact that he's had in the games that he's played. Like, literally, I mean, even last night at Halifax, just chasing complete lost causes and then stopping them being able to clear it, and just little things like that that's just made such a huge difference. You know, for me, he's been the missing link. And I sort of thought back today, like when we had Akil Wright, sometimes we'd play him at centre back and we'd say, oh, Akil's such a good centre back, but we lose him in midfield. Imagine if we'd had Akil at centre half like he plays for Stockport now, and Marvin in midfield. It would have been brilliant. I also sort of thought last night, could he possibly even win player of the year? I mean, it sounds mad. I think Fallowfield's a shoo-in for it, jokes aside, but I think Armstrong will get some of the votes, surely, Dave. I mean, he's just had such an impact.
Oh, absolutely. It's been stunning. The transformation I think we've seen since he's come in, his work rate, his skill on the ball and off the ball, his reading of the game, he's getting into positions that are incredibly useful. It's the midfield is functioning again, and it's been something we've been crying out for. And I think when he came in, obviously you look at the stats, and I know this is a thing that we'll learn from this season that on paper, players coming in, and it's been the way with York City for years and years. But you might have a player on paper who looks brilliant, who's been absolutely fantastic at previous clubs, and just doesn't come and perform here. Now, obviously, he's been out of squads, he's not been in and around lots and lots of first team action. But then he's come here, and it's a stroke of genius. He's been absolutely brilliant. And yet again, last night, he was there in the thick of it, he was involved in so much. And it could well be that his arrival genuinely is what keeps us up. His involvement in the games, and I know obviously he come on to Depot as well, and his turn in form since Adam Hinchwood's come in as well, but those two together, working together obviously amongst other players, has been really, really refreshing. Like you, Fallowfield for me has been player of the season. But yeah, I mean, there'll be no crosswords here if Armstrong was given it, because it has been amazing since he's come in.
Yeah, and Ben, I feel like we can expect to see even more from Armstrong. I mean, he's hardly played all season, like match fitness and stuff like that was my concern when he came in. I sort of thought, well, I think he'd played 60 minutes for about in the past 3 months or something like that. So surely with a full pre-season behind him, he's just going to get better and better, isn't he? I mean, he just looks like, I know he went off late last night and we conceded after he went off, but he's kind of energy levels are just unbelievable, aren't they? Just from start to finish.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he's been that missing link we've been after for years, ever since, I try to think of recent times. You mentioned Akil, right? But I also think about Russell Penny in that sort of 2013-14 season when he came in from Cheltenham, constantly battling to get that ball, constantly wanting to take the ball forward. And I think, we look at Armstrong and hopefully we'll go on, depending on who he plays with next season. But I think he's almost a shoo-in, isn't he, for a starting lineup for us. And I think he just galvanizes everyone around him. And I think he really is a key player that's come into our squad, because I think whereas energy levels in matches or kind of that will to win the ball constantly has been okay, he's brought the expectations a lot higher. And that's almost maybe made everyone else around him, put that extra little yard back in, put that little, chase after that little ball, because you never know what might happen with it. And still remember last night when I stood with you, Dan, that where he just suddenly came from behind from nowhere, managed to win the ball back and then just casually played it to Hunt, I think it was, just on the right side. Didn't come to it of anything, but it was just that little bit of, we thought that was gone. Usually it was meant to be a Halifax break or what it would have been for the whole of the season. But he got there, he won it, came from behind the man, managed to get it cleanly, and then off we were again, and we were back in the ascendancy. So I think he's been an absolute revelation, and it's been a midfielder we've been crying out for a long time.
Yeah, with and without the ball, I mean, we'll move on from him in a minute. It's not just the Armstrong show, but we could have easily filled an hour about how good he's been. But yeah, just with and without the ball, like when he's got the ball, he's always looking for a pass, like you say, or driving it forward. That's what I like about him. He can get you up and down the pitch, and without the ball, he just chases so many lost causes. And just I think when he's putting some of those challenges in, it just gives everyone else around him such confidence. I mean, tactically, Adam Hinshelwood is kind of, I don't know whether some of these, well, I think these are kind of things he's tried at Worthing and these other teams where he's played people out of position. I think some of these were forced upon him with injuries and stuff. But Fallowfield at centre back, Lattie Fairweather's played right back, Batty again last night was having to play right back, Dippo's gone out wide at times. He's not afraid to sort of experiment with players out of natural positions. Dave, is that something that you think is good, both in the short term and the long term, kind of going forward?
I think it's a positive. It goes to show the players themselves, look, you can play in those different positions. And I know there's probably a bit of resistance more of them. You know, I guess it's like, you know, somebody saying to me, "Oh, you're a drummer, but you're going to play the guitar or something." It's obviously not that extreme, but it's that thing, isn't it, where you become a journeyman midfielder, you become a journeyman left back or whatever, and you're being switched around. But I think if he's been able to instill a belief in them that they can play in those positions, and Fallowfield's, you know, position change has been a revelation, really. And he's saying to them, "Look, it is possible. You can do it, and I believe in you." And that's one of the things that I've noticed. He's been incredibly positive about the group of players we've got. I think that it's a good thing because, you know, going into next season, regardless of how many of these players we keep, there will be times when players are called upon to switch positions, when we have injuries, when we have players who go out on loan, etc. When the squad is shaken up, it's great to be able to slot people into different positions. So yeah, I think it's a positive move myself.
Yeah, definitely. And then, and sort of, I think we touched upon earlier about Depo and Maz Kuia as well. I think this is kind of appropriate to sort of say, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent, isn't it? I think some people were getting on both Depo and Maz's case, but I think they've been outstanding, haven't they, in recent games, Ben? And I think just we know what Maz can do, but kind of. Sometimes people said he can't do it on a consistent basis, but I think since he's got back in the side, in fact, he was the one highlight at Altrincham, wasn't he? That goal he scored in his performance, and since then he's just really kicked on, and Depo as well. Like he just works so hard for the team, and now he's sort of getting back amongst the goals as well. He just looks like that again, like he was at the start of the season, that £250,000 striker that you know, literally, I think if we can have him fit for a full season under Adam Hinshelwood and the way that he's kind of sets his teams up, you know, Dipper should be getting 30 goals in a season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's Depot a lot better when he played down the middle rather than on the either side. I think he's more effective there. But yeah, it's good that he's finally firing again and has that confidence. I think he just needed that one goal, didn't he? When he because he's back to full fitness, he just needed that goal to get him going. And I think he managed to get that the other day. And it's seen ever since that Bromley goal where he managed to lob the keeper from 30 yards or so. He's been outstanding, you know, really, really compared to the Yardley era when you sort of think back about it. I wonder if something's gone on there, because it's a different player again. You know, he's fighting for every ball, he's really trying to push the team forward, he's trying to win every header. And as we know about his finishing, there's a goal in him every game potentially. So he's absolutely fantastic. And I agree with Maz as well. I've always been a big fan of him. And I think injuries and just haven't quite. Elton, you know, you think about the last season, you know, it was superb assists and goals wise early on in the season. He got injured for a bit and we didn't really see him again too much until the end of the season. And it's been a similar story this year. You know, he got ill into middle of the season. But I think we're a much better side at the minute with Maz in it than without him. And I'm glad to see him doing well. And I think he might not always be the fastest and he might not always play the correct ball, but he does have it in his locker to pull off something like he did against Chesterfield to just have a quick tap and then fire it into the top corner. You know, it reminded me of that goal he scored against Dorking where he just cut inside and curled it into the top corner back in August. I think, like I say, he doesn't have the pace necessarily to beat a man for speed, but he does have the technical ability, which I think is just enough at this level to be at least mid-table. So I'm really happy to see Maz back in the squad.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And Dave, just coming back to Dippo slightly and sort of thinking ahead, and I mentioned there about him having a potential to get, you know, maybe not 30, maybe 20 plus each season. But do you think at the minute he's enjoying being the main man again? You know, it feels like at the minute, you know, I know it's Matt Ogler tweeted about him earlier and about Blond Dippo being a bad man and kind of Tom Poole with the iconic image of Dippo as well. And you know, I just feel like at the minute he's back to being that main guy. The team's sort of almost built around him. And do you think longer term we should kind of stick with that? Because there's a temptation, isn't it, to kind of bring in other strikers and stuff like that. But spreading the goals around the team might not be what we need to do. Maybe we need to kind of tell Dippo, look, you are our main guy, and kind of build it all around him.
Yeah, I mean, he's been brilliant. You can't deny the fact that since Adam Hinshelwood's come in, really, he's turned it around, like the performance of the team in parallel, really. He was brilliant last night. He was brilliant the previous few games. I think that he's had a lot of pressure. He's probably brought a lot of it on himself in terms of he's really, really good. He's come with a very high price tag that was widely reported. Obviously, I don't think it was necessarily confirmed, but he's come down here. He had a big profile in the National League, and for whatever reason, it wasn't clicking with Ardley. And I think that when we got into that patch just before Ardley left, I think we all probably at that point thought, well, is he going to play again? Well, certainly he's going to start again. And he's just had a total transformation. I think building a team around Dippo is a great idea. Now, there will be some people who say we need more breadth in attack. And I think that is absolutely right. But we've got players like Mavs, like Armstrong, who can get into these positions to help him. And some of the goals he scored in the last few weeks have been brilliant. And I think if we do keep his confidence up, help him and bring a team in around him, I think he could be, he could be one of the top scorers in the league next season.
Yeah, and I think assist wise as well. I mean, that pass he did for Mazzy's goal against Chesterfield, the weight of it was just absolutely perfect. And I think he's underrated for that sort of thing, Dupo. I think he, quite rightly, with his goals like the one against Bromley, you get applause for that. But he does a lot of work off the ball as well. And I think Adam wasn't quite happy with his work rate first half last night. But work rate second half, he was tremendous. And, for Adam to get that reaction out of him, I think he's so good. Another player that I think has really come to the fore has been Hunt as well, Ben. I, when we first got him on loan, I think he was hauled off at half-time at Barnet and wasn't in the squad the next game. And almost you kind of expected him to maybe go back. But he's managed to force his way back in the side. And I think, again, Armstrong has been so good, so rightly getting the plaudits. But Hunt isn't too far behind him for me. I think, again, last night, his assist for the goal was fantastic. Bit of vision to sort of play back to the back post, and I just think he's get the more games he's playing, the more and more we're seeing from him as an attacking outlet. And I would be really happy to see him and Amos, to be fair, re-sign again in the summer.
Yeah, I think need to wait until the summer to sort of see definitely first which league we're in, but just maybe. I hope we have some kind of plan. But I do think Hunt's turned it around big time. I still remember being at Barnet and he gave away, I think, possession definitely for the first goal. And he's just almost, it's almost that culture at the time of just not tracking back, not trying to, win the ball or be any kind of, have any kind of effect on the game. And the turnaround from Hunt's been outstanding. He's been adaptive. He's managed to get where he needs to go. And he's really looked to push us on. I think having Armstrong next to him, someone that I think with Armstrong, without wanting to go back to him too much, the fact that you've got a man next to you that's willing to do the hard work and go and fight and get the ball back means you want to fight and get the ball back if it's near you, and you want to potentially play a pass, or you want to be near him because you know he's going to win that ball and you want to be able to support him to get that pass off. I think that's really helped Hunt in knowing that he's got the man next to him where he can just be near to, and he'll eventually get the ball and be able to do something with it in the middle of play. I think he's been absolutely fantastic, and the way he whipped the ball in last night for Dippo was just absolutely perfect. Just slightly too far out for the keeper to come get it, but just perfect for Dippo just to slightly tap it in. And I think he's been one of the best ones. Be happy to see him here next season still, and same with Amos. Similarly, wouldn't be too disappointed if they left, but I would be quite happy if they did stay, because I think they have really been brilliant, both of them.
Yeah, and you just mentioned something there that's made me think that you said there about Hunt, and having Armstrong next to him, and I think as an attacking player like him who wants to get forward, knowing that there's someone there alongside you who can almost mop it up if you kind of make a mistake, allows these players to kind of take risks. And I think under Adam, Dave, I feel like players are more willing to take risks. I think under Ardley, I think we were trying to be solid, and there was reasons for that, and I understood them at the time. He kept telling us that the players weren't good enough to play more attacking, which I think we'll debate probably more at length in the end of season kind of review show. But do you think like he is allowing these players to take risks and go forward and allow them to kind of express themselves? And that is probably a reason why against Chesterfield, even though we were 1-0 down and at times we were getting pulled apart and we could have conceded other goals in that first half, but it didn't deter us. The second half, the players were still willing to get themselves forward and try to get themselves back in the game. And I don't think we would have done that under Neil.
I don't think we would have done. You make a really good point talking about the way that the players or the squad have been spoken about by management, and obviously hardly been the case in point. When he did speak about the team, as you said, he did say, you know, these players aren't good enough to play the attacking brand of football, or words to that effect. I think if that was me, if somebody said to me in my job, you're not good enough at your job, I think it would have quite an impact mentally. And I think when you're an athlete, a professional athlete, as these guys are supposed to be, I think it not will, you know, it doesn't just have that mental impact. It obviously has the impact on your work rate as well. You know, you just think, wow, if, you know, if the gaffer doesn't think we're good enough. I think that what, I mean, obviously, I've not been at the training ground. None of us have. But from the interviews and the way that Hinshelwood speaks, he is speaking as though he values them all. He thinks they're a great set of lads and he thinks they're really good footballers, or they're good footballers. And I think that that makes a massive difference. It means that when he asks them to try something, like you say, take a risk, play more attacking football, get the ball forward more, I think they're probably prepared to do it because, you know, they respect him. They enjoy what he does in training, presumably. They feel that the training is good. They feel that they're benefiting from it. And so they're prepared to take his, you know, it's instructions. And I think that that's made a massive difference because it's very clear that it isn't just one or two players. It's the whole squad who have clearly bought into what he's bought. Because the thing is, you couldn't see this 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, or whatever it was. I prefer to block the date of the Ultron game out of my memory. But whenever that was, you couldn't have seen this coming. And I think that the only way that this has turned around is that everyone in the squad has bought into his way of playing, into his management style. And that, I think, is brilliant because it's shown that the players will take risks. And also, it shows just what they can do if they're motivated enough.
I think just to add to what Dave said there, I think as fans as well, it's galvanised us a bit because, you know, we used to go into games, I'm sure you'd both agree with me, going, well, if we don't concede the first goal and we can just get the first one, then maybe we might have a chance of winning, or, you know, we can perhaps snatch a draw here, or it'd be good if we could win today, but they're a tough side. And for the first time in weeks, I went into that game yesterday going, I think we can do them here. I think we've got a good chance of winning. I think we are good enough to beat these, despite them being just outside the playoffs and us having the season we've had. And same with Chesterfield. Yes, they were in party mode, but I think a lot of us went into Chesterfield kind of a bit like, well, we beat Bromley. I think we can give these a good game at least. And I think we're all going into now Eastleigh, Woking and Solihull going, we're going to win these. And I think that kind of belief from us fans as well is nice to have, as well as probably helping the players quite a lot as well. So yeah, I don't think it's just helped the players. I think as fans as well, you know, we're now going in with that belief that York City can actually do some damage, you know.
Absolutely, and I think that that's the same for kind of the players under Neil. Again, you know, Neil would talk up the opposition quite a lot week in, week out. Whereas I look at the teams that we play and feel like there's very little from the top end to the bottom end. I mean, I watched Dorking beat Chesterfield 4-1 before I set off for whatever game we had at home that day, and Dorking absolutely played them off the park. And so when we were playing Chesterfield and they'd already won promotion, I didn't go into that game thinking, oh, we'll be on the end of a hiding here. You know, Chesterfield at times in the first half played some really nice stuff, and you could see why they had won the league. They've got some good players. But, you know, Halifax again last night, there was, I just felt we were in complete control of that game. And obviously, we'll come on to the late equaliser. But there is literally nothing in this league, is it, Dave? I mean, I think next season, if there's going to be quite a big gap, I think, between the season finishes this month. We're clearly not going to be in the playoffs. So there's quite a long period there for Adam to get rid of players he doesn't want, bring in the players he does want, and really get everyone buying into that what he wants to do. And I just think it's the sort of league that you can be at the bottom end of one season and then all of a sudden be at the top end the next season without jumping too far ahead. It's not inconceivable, is it?
No,
No, I think yes. Go.
no, it's not. No, and with the players that we've we've got with the core, obviously at the end of the season we'll chat about who we want to sign and obviously who we want to part company with. But I think with whoever we've got, if it's Hinshelwood's squad and it's Adam's squad, then hopefully a squad that buys into him, a squad that is backed by the fans as well, should do really well. And if you look at the teams coming down as well, or on paper that probably will come down, it's not a particularly strong pack, I don't think, coming down from League Two. So it's anyone's. It's an open thing. And this season, obviously, Chesterfield were far and away the favourites from the off after last season, obviously being pipped at the post in the playoffs. So I think that next season it's anyone's. And we can, if we can get the right squad together and we can get on a bit of a run, you never know where we might end up.
Ben, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I think it's a huge summer. Just to slightly add to it, is it's the first settled summer we've had in about 5 years or so. There's no COVID impact. There's no late playoff run that's meant that we've had to, we've got promoted, so we've had to change our plans perhaps. There's no takeover for the first time in 2 years, hopefully. So it's the first time that we're settled and we can actually start thinking, I'd like to think maybe after Saturday we can properly start thinking about who we can bring in the summer and who we want to keep. And that might leave the final few games for Hinshelwood to tinker about a little bit just to see, right, do we actually want to keep this player or do we want to play him here? And I think it's a huge summer. It's a real opportunity, like you say, to potentially bounce from a lower end National League team to potentially be challenging right up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this episode has generally been massively positive. So, Gary Rogers, who listens quite regularly, who didn't like the negativity of the last one, I think he'll be pretty pleased with tonight's episode. But there has been some criticism of players right the way through the season. Some of it quite personal, I think, and some of it that I find really uncomfortable. And again, last night, Castro and George Saxe-Kenworthy getting it in the neck from a few angles of the fan base. I think George Saxe-Kenworthy was spat at Altrincham. I mean, I think you two were there that night. I don't know if you saw that incident, but that for me is absolutely horrendous and disgusting, and something I don't associate with York City fans, who 99% of are absolutely unbelievable, as proven again last night with the atmosphere. But tagging people in on social media when we're not doing well, criticizing Matt Ougler, who has literally put his money where his mouth is. And Adam Hinshelwood's emotional interview with Yorvik Radio a bit back as well, clearly had a lot of kind of stick thrown his way when literally he was 2 weeks into the job and doing his best. I mean, I know this is part and parcel of football and has been for a long time, Dave, but it's really got me thinking as I've got older and, I work in a school, I work with kids with mental health issues and things like that. And I just find that sometimes some of our fans are just really personal, really kind of like overstep the mark. And I think it's about time we sort of self-regulated ourselves as a fan base. I do think there was some mistakes last night in the build-up to that equaliser. But am I going to absolutely hammer them on social media? No, I'm not, because they play for York City Football Club and I want them to do well. I want George Saxe-Kenworthy to do well for York City. I want him to kind of recover from the Altrincham game and go on to have a good football career. Hammering him for a potential mistake, or even if you thought it was Castro's mistake, it's like, oh, you thought it was a bit of both. Surely it's not acceptable anymore.
No, it's not. It's completely unacceptable. And unfortunately, I saw what happened at Altrincham and it was horrendous. And the people involved, the person involved, personally, I think should be banned from the club. It is not the way to act as a human being, let alone a football fan, let alone a York City fan. Spitting at anyone is just vile and there's just no place in modern society for that. And one thing that I'll just add on that is that there were fans who did call him out on the night. There was a lot of anger when that happened. And I think that we do have, as a whole, a really good fan base, as you alluded to earlier on. Respectful fan base, passionate but respectful. I would say that the pile-ons haven't been very pleasant at all. And as you've said, this has gone across to playing staff. It's also gone across managers previously, and it's also gone across the owner, obviously, recently. And it doesn't sit well with me. I would say that they're being paid to do a job, and that's their job. And like I came back to earlier on, if someone spat at me when I was doing my job, I'd be utterly dismayed. Or if somebody was abusing me personally for doing my job, I just, you know, that would be a step too far. I think the problem is that in football, you know, errors have big repercussions in terms of results in games, positions in league, that kind of thing. And I'm not defending it at all. People obviously say things in the heat of the moment, and then they regret it afterwards, and then they do apologise, or they hold their hands up and say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I really, really hope that the players involved last night get the support that they need from the club and get the support from fans, because I know, you know, the majority of the fan base behind them, because we've all got to pull together and make this one final push for the end of the season. And there's no place for disrespecting players, abusing players, personal insults to management and to owners. You know, we just need to all pull in the right direction.
Ben, anything to add?
Yeah, I think criticism's absolutely fine with players, but it's just making sure you don't tag them in personally or respond to their tweets necessarily. I mean, we've all been guilty of being angry in the heat of the moment, but I think just making sure you don't tag it, because then, you know, if a player's physically gone looking for news about themselves, that's almost on them a little bit. But I think to just make sure that they're not directly going for them, and it's just that borderline between criticism and abuse, isn't it? I think that's the key to work out, is what's classed as criticism and where you see the line of abuse. I think the easiest way is just make sure you don't tag players in. You know, I try not to tag players in if I've said they've had a poor game on Twitter, or if I don't think they're putting in the effort that's required. But, you know, as Dave says, you wouldn't expect people to go spitting on you in your job, so probably best not to do it in other people's jobs either.
Yeah, I think constructive criticism is absolutely fine, and I think players know that. I think, you know, they're in a privileged position of being a professional footballer, and it is, like I mentioned, it is sort of part and parcel of it. And I think Olsen would be a good example of collectively saying that it felt like a bit of a lack of effort on the night. And for the people that have travelled and paid their money, obviously you'll get your student one reimbursed, Ben. But, you know, people are entitled to an opinion, but I think, like you say, when it's abuse, I think it does overstep the mark. And I think some support as well. And I mean, I'm literally talking about a very small minority. Like I say, most York City fans are absolutely unbelievable. But I saw one earlier on in the season, someone having a support of Tyler Cordner saying, you know, you shouldn't be abusing Tyler Cordner. But someone dug up a tweet of that same person who'd done the exact same thing, calling out other players in previous years. So I think we've all got a responsibility to kind of remember what we've said and done. Just moving it on then. Some players that aren't kind of involved at the minute. I'm thinking of Alex Woodyard, Michael Duckworth, who I don't know whether he's injured or out of favour at the minute, to be brutally honest. Will Davis as well. Do we think that's the end of their York City careers at the minute? They've not been involved in the squad for. I know Alex Woodyard's been put up for sale, as it were, but didn't seem to get a move before the end of the window. What do you see any of those three playing for York City again? I think give that to Dave, yeah.
The move for Davies is probably one that may work for all parties, certainly on the short term. Obviously, he's come up from the south. I think he worked in London previously to come into York City. So I think maybe that's a move that could be made permanent. He had a good time up here. You know, I think he was playing well on the whole. I think most people would say that he was a positive rather than a negative signing. I don't know. I'm not sure about Woodyard. He obviously has had some, again, had some ups and downs at the club, and after Altrincham, it just seemed to disappear completely. And I think that it may well be time for us to part company, if that opportunity arises, and we can loan him out or we can sell him, then that might be best for all involved. If he's not in the plans for Adam, then it would certainly seem to make sense for him to be, you know, listed for sale or for transfer as a loanee if the opportunity comes along.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. For me, Duckworth should have gone about 2 years ago. Far too injury prone. And he's knocking on a bit now, isn't he? And I think when you can't get that consistent defence with him anywhere near it, because he's often injured. You know, at how many appearances has he made this season? You know, especially starts. So I think it's almost time to part ways with him, definitely in the summer. I don't think we will see him again if he is injured. And even if he's not, I'd be surprised if he's getting anywhere, you know, on the pitch in terms of starts. Woodyard, comparing to Marvin Armstrong, I know there's slightly different roles in midfield that they're playing, but I've seen more from Marvin in the 3 or 4 games he's played in than Woodyard has done all season. And I think, you know, it might be a case of he's a little bit homesick, wants to move back down south, does Woodyard, because that's where he was linked with. I think it'll be maybe a good move for all parties if he moved back down south. I think, as Dave says, it might work out with Will Davies going out on loan and potentially giving pre-season and maybe loan him out again, because we've got him on a couple of years contract, haven't we? Let's not rule him out for the future, because I think he has got something, but let's make sure he's getting consistent games out on loan somewhere and potentially building his skill set up for us for maybe a season later or so.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, you know, at a lesser extent, is kind of what we did with Cedric Mayne, didn't they? You know, never played for York. I know it's different to Davies, who has played and scored goals, but Mayne was loaned out to Blyth, made a bit of a reputation for himself. Darlow came in and paid more money than what we'd paid for him in the first place. So that could potentially happen with Will Davies. So edging towards the end of the episode, what I think 4 points clear now going into the final three fixtures. Let's bring it to the actual crux of it, as it were. It would take York City now to completely implode, I think, to not stay up, Dave. Or am I being a little bit naive?
I don't think you've been naive at all. I did have to say that I did have a little shudder last night with the chance of Yorker staying up, which, you know, I do agree with deep down, but I do sometimes when I hear these chants, I do think, oh, let's not go too prematurely. Having said that, in the car on the way home from Halifax last night, we were discussing all the permutations, and I do think that if we can get a win on Saturday, we'll be safe. I think a draw on Saturday and a win against Woking, obviously, will be, you know, we should be safe. I think, obviously, nothing's mathematically done until it's done, but hopefully we can get it over the line this Saturday, for want of a better expression. And obviously, it depends on the other teams as well, but I just can't see the teams in and around us, especially below us, picking up enough points to be able to catch us at this moment. I think we're hopefully over the line, which is something that I would not even have dreamt of 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's remarkable. It comes back to that point again, where the change in the team, the change in fortune for York City has been really nothing short of a miracle. Might be a bit overdramatic, but yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think looking at the teams, Ben, I mean, Oxford City are already done, but you'd think Boreham Wood are going to be joining them. They're completely, there's always one team, isn't there, that falls like a stone towards the end of the season, and they're it. It looked like we were at one point, but we seem to have got the form at the right time of the season. Would you concur with my thoughts that it's ours to kind of lose now, and we'd have to completely implode, as it were, for the next few games?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's totally ours to lose. I think, you know, I wouldn't write off Boreham Wood just yet, because Luke Garrard's a very experienced manager at this level and he's worked wonders with them. Do think they will go down personally, but I wouldn't necessarily write them off. But I think we're probably just doing enough to be clear of them. I think they've got a game in hand on us, but they're 6 points behind. So they've got to win two out of their four just to even catch us. And we've got 7 goals better than them on goal difference. So they have to turn around a 7-goal swing. So you're looking at they have to get, you know, 2 wins and a draw, and we lose all three of our games just to overtake us. So I think Boreham Wood are not catching us. Dorking, I don't think will catch us. I think even if they pull it once again, you know, they've got 4 games left. They'd have to win, I think, three of them to get near to us, or you know, win two, draw two, just to equal where we are or beat us. So I can't see Dorking doing that, which then just leaves sort of Kidderminster really. And you know, we've played the same amount of points as the same amount of games as 4 points ahead. And I think this weekend could be crucial. If we win on Saturday and they lose to Halifax, I think that's it, done. Mathematically, it won't be because of Boreham Wood's game in hand, but I think that'll be it. You know, I think we can then look at the final two games with absolute No stress, no worries, knowing that we've done enough. So I think if you were to ask me which three are going down, I've got the three that are in the bottom at the minute of Dorking, Barnwood and Kidderminster. But I think it's very, very close to being finished. We just need to make sure that we don't mess it up in these final couple of games. And like I said, there's always one team that crumbles. Let's make sure we're not just going to absolutely crumble in these last three games as well.
Yeah, I think Kidderminster is the late live kickoff as well, isn't it? So if York can get those points on the board before they play, that adds even more pressure than it. Obviously, it would be better if they were for them if they were playing in the early kickoff and getting that win, but it won't be for them. Just wanted to mention just before we kind of wrap it up, the Supporters Trust I think needs a bit of a shout out, and we can do this without feeling like we're blowing smoke up Jim's ass because he's not here. But I think recently, that kind of togetherness we were talking about today on social media, and filling the LNER, which we kind of did for the Chesterfield game. The atmosphere was fantastic, and one I don't think we've really witnessed since the playoff game against Boston. Dave, it's good to see that Sports Trust, who have been bashed and some for some things you can say rightly so over the years. But I feel like probably for the first time in a long time, I think they have got a good representation of the supporter base, and kind of it feels like they're doing their bit to help us kind of on and off the pitch. And Saturday, Friday game against Chesterfield, sorry, we were really the 12th man, I think, the crowd.
Absolutely. I mean, the game against Chesterfield was incredible, and it was really quite something to see the stadium as full as it was, our fans in the North Stand as well. It felt like a fortress. We've talked about it over the years, and obviously building that fortress, and it felt like the fans were the 12th man. And I'm good friends with Jim, as is Ben, and the Trust have been brilliant. The new iteration, I guess you call it, of the Trust board. And the way that they are working so closely with the owners, and they are working as effective shareholders in the club, and they're being proactive about things. I think it's really, really refreshing. And seeing all the positivity on social media they're helping to drive does really make a difference. And I think it helps people realise that it isn't just York City Football Club, the owners and the staff, that the trust as stakeholders do have a part to play. And it isn't necessarily just chucking loads of money in. It's doing all these initiatives. It's bringing in fans who probably haven't been engaged in the club before. And I think that's one thing that is really, really important is not, it's not just a new generation, but it's bringing families in. It's bringing people who maybe wouldn't have thought to come to York City, who are residents in the city or, the outlying areas. It's bringing them in. It's offering tickets for free. It's offering cheap tickets. It's helping people out who are in, maybe in a bit of financial difficulty. All those things are as important as what goes on the pitch. And I think this is one of the great things the Trust have managed to do the last few weeks is it's been this kind of excitement through the week as well. It's been putting a positive spin on things. It's been driving ticket sales. And yeah, for that, they deserve all the credit.
Ben, I mean, I felt at times, and I don't mind saying this, and I've said it. I think I've said it to Jim in the past, but I questioned at times whether they needed a bit of a rebrand and to sort of start again because of their kind of reputation. But again, like just to reiterate what I was saying, that they have, for my money, turned it around a little bit. I mean, I'm not just saying this because I was invited to their trust meeting last week, alongside Russ Howarth, which was I was really honoured to be asked to go and speak at it, but it is those sort of trusts that I've never been to that before. And there was probably what 20, 30 people there that night. But I really would encourage York City fans to join the trust. It's only £1 and go along to us for sort of things because they have got a little bit that is a one vehicle to have a little bit of a voice, isn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they've done a lot of work, a lot of free work as well over the past couple of years. They haven't always got it right, and they've been rightly criticised when they haven't. But they have got the best interests of York City at heart, all of them. And I think, you look at the work they've done, in even with like the takeover with Matt Ogle, they've made sure that things like our club crest, our colours, it has to go through the Supporters Trust if any future chairman wants to change those colours or change the ground. They've put those protections in place, which is absolutely fantastic. And doing things for the fans, like those socials, like pushing it on social media, like giving those ticket offers to try and raise some money so that those who might not be able to necessarily afford it can go. And I'm looking forward to seeing, without any kind of ownership takeover that they're having to deal with for this season, how they can push themselves on further the next season, how they can, really represent the supporters base and hopefully totally get rid of that reputation that we should just get rid of the trust or that they're absolutely useless, because that's what it was for many years. They just kind of, they had no presence, whereas now they do, which is absolutely fantastic from them all.
Yeah, and on that positivity, I think we'll close the episode. And like I said, it's been nice to kind of do an episode where we are all on the same page and we are all really happy. And but I think we kind of tell it how we feel and how it is. So thank you both for giving it your time to speak tonight. As ever, this is a spin-off from Your Gospel Radio, who are in their 60th year celebrating this year. If you are able to donate to the charities, justgiving.com/YourGospelRadio. Equally, if you've enjoyed tonight's episode, give us a review. Also, York Gospel Radio are now regulars at the York City press conferences. So if you subscribe to us, you'll kind of, they're only kind of three or 4 minutes every week, but that will appear in your feed. And Phil Bewers goes there every week to speak to Adam Hinchelwood, and there are different questions to what the press and Radio York will be asking. So yeah, it's just a bit of extra content if you wanted to listen to that. That would be great as well. So, yeah, thanks again. And we'll be back in a few short weeks for the end of season review, where hopefully we'll have a full panel to see what they've made of this roller coaster season. So, thanks again.